everybody. It's not too early to say Merry Christmas, is it? Merry Christmas to you. My name is Dan. It's my honor to serve as pastor here. I also get the humbling privilege of bringing the main message each week. So every Sunday we're going to teach and preach out of the Bible. We believe that's how God has revealed himself to us, and how he's revealed what he desires for us and from us. So we'll be in the book of Matthew today, starting a new series called Rescuing Christmas, and we are going to work our way through that for the month of December, see all the ways that God rescues Christmas with providing hope and love and joy to us. And everybody doing okay? Don't the lights look great? I love the Christmas lights. There's some people who decorated. They use their gifts and talents to decorate, and those decorations look so great. Also, you look great. Someone should tell you before you go home. I want you to look around the room and see all the people in our church family who don't watch the weather. Just look around. Look around and see. These are the people. Or who don't let the weather get in the way. Haven't you decided if you're going to live in this region of the country, you probably sometimes have to ignore the weather, right? Otherwise, we would kind of pack it in. We're going to be in the book of Matthew here today, looking at chapter 2. A couple of verses to get us going, and then we're going to observe pretty closely the way in which God had worked in the wise men in the Christmas story. How did God work in and through the wise men? And what did he do in them? What did he do for them? So we're going to make some observations today and then let that kind of apply to our own lives. So Matthew chapter 2, verses 1 and 2 to begin with. Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea during the reign of King Herod. About that time, some wise men from eastern lands arrived in Jerusalem asking, "Where is the newborn king of the Jews? We saw his star as it rose, and we have come to worship him." I experience on a regular basis in January something called PCSD, post-Christmas sadness disorder. I know PTSD is real and real people have really suffered and it's a serious thing, and I don't mean to make light of that. But my PCSD is also very serious. Once the Christmas tree is taken down and dragged away in a box, I feel like my soul gets taken with it. January comes along and I start having sensations like, you know what, Christmas was great, now it's over. I don't know if I even have a reason to live now that Christmas is over. You ever feel like January is the darkest month of the year? The grayest month, the saddest month, and we have worked our way up to get to Christmas, and it came with all of its cheer and all of its stress, and then all of a sudden it goes away and it feels like we have settled into a level of sadness that very few people experience. My wife thinks about getting to Christmas for months and months. She's a get-to-Christmas. Some people are like her. They think about Christmas and all of the fun and all the family and all the food and all the stress that goes along with it is somehow a part of the Christmas cheer. Then there are other people that you meet, and those people are just trying to get through it. They're just trying to get through the family part. They're just trying to get through the gift buying, the budgeting, the meal prep. Am I going to have enough? Am I going to be able to do everything that's expected of me? I'm not quite sure who I'm going to be with. I'm not quite sure how I'm going to get all those presents ready. I'm not quite sure who I'm going to disappoint again this year. But some people are trying to get to Christmas. Other people are trying to get through Christmas. But one thing is for sure, that Christmas, when Christmas goes away, we've got a whole nother year to work through. We find that reality settles in. And the problem with Christmas is that it only comes once a year, but eventually, quickly, it seems to go away. Now, the calories from Christmas, they stay for the whole year, right? But the holiday cheer goes away. And here's what I think that it's important for us to see, and we're going to look at it closely. Imagine that God has provided a way for us that our lives of cheer aren't seasonal. In other words, he doesn't invite you to come to a season where he's going to introduce you to Christmas cheer that's seasonal and circumstantial, meaning that it's short term and it's going to come and go. It's going to be seasonal and temporary. Instead, what God invites us to in Christmas is a lifelong, lasting joy that anchors us from all of the challenges and all of the unwanted and undesirable circumstances that January through November is going to bring. That's the kind of joy he offers to us, not a seasonal cheer. So when you think about your faith and when you think about your Jesus, I want you to imagine that God has provided for us a rescue operation to save us from all of the life-altering sadness and stress that comes by just getting through Christmas or just getting to Christmas. Imagine if there were a joy that lasted, the kind of joy that would be worth finding. And so here's my question today, and this is kind of what we're going to see through the wise men here. God kind of brings this question to us, and we need to consider this together. Does God offer us cheer, or does he offer us joy? Does he offer us cheer, or does he offer us Christmas joy? Christmas offers us more than seasonal cheer. It is everyday cheer, and it's called joy. Joy is mentioned in the Bible 200 times. Joy, joyful, rejoice, rejoicing, over 200 times. And what does that tell you? For me, that means that joy is a massive part of the plot of the Christian story, the Christian faith. And if you know the Christian faith, and if you know the Christ in Christmas and Christian, then you know that it's a story of joy and experiencing and living and learning to live in that joy. Joy does not mean we are experiencing favorable circumstances. I would have had so much more happiness on Thanksgiving Day if my Dallas Cowboys didn't go out and embarrass themselves on Thanksgiving Day. I would have had more happiness. It would have been more cheerful for me. Maybe the food would have tasted a little better. Maybe all of that is true. But those circumstances, favorable circumstances, are not where I find my joy. And we have to catch this. We have to grab this. We have to live this. We have to own this. We have to understand this, that our joy is the fruit of being in right relationship with God. It is the result of our relationship with God being in tight. And specifically, we have to be careful that if we are people who are experiencing Christmas on a regular basis, year after year after year, we have to recognize that our Christmas joy shouldn't fade, even though the sun seems to fade for months. Even though the circumstances, the challenges that you're facing may go on and on and on, so does the joy. And we have hope that God has rescued us from all of the challenges, no matter how severe and no how much. Now, how did he do that? Well, Jesus Christ was born. He was provided to us and for us. He was born to a poor, unmarried Jewish couple in the village of Bethlehem. As the Son of God, Jesus was conceived by the Spirit in the body of Virgin Mary, a young girl who was engaged to Joseph. Now the angel appears to Joseph and he says, basically, this child is from the Father, conceived by the Spirit, and I want you to do something very specific. And the angel tells Joseph, I want you to name him something very, very specific. I want you to name him Jesus. And if you know anything about the name Jesus, you might catch that the name Jesus means God rescues, which means that he was telling Joseph that I am going to send you a son, and the son is going to be my son. My son is going to be a rescuer. The story of Christmas has a hero, and the hero is a rescuing hero. And he rescues us from ordinary, everyday, mundane boredom with slight spikes in our happiness, depending on who we're with and how our circumstances are going. The rescue story means that God will help us overcome the idea that we just have to get through it, that we just have to get by, and that we just have to enjoy the season while it lasts. That in fact, there is a daily joy that lasts, and God shows up, and one of the first people to experience it are called the Magi. Or you may understand it better by thinking of them as the wise men. Now, we assume, we speculate that there are how many wise men? Three. A couple reasons for that. One is there is a Christmas carol that we sing and have been singing for a long time that goes like this. We three kings of Orient are. So what do we know? There are three kings and they're from the Orient, right? According to the Christmas carol. Well, we also, actually, we know more than that, and we know that they are not kings. They were wise men. They were intellectual. They were learned astrologers. They were also devoted to studying mysteries, ancient mysteries. They were devoted to studying history, sacred writings, dream interpretation. They were very much academically devoted to understanding astrology, the pursuit of wisdom, and even magic. And we also know there weren't necessarily three of them, even though it seems like there are, because they gave gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And obviously, that would only require three people to bring three gifts, right? So, but none of that is necessarily true. We know that they brought their gifts. We don't know how many there are, and we know that they are wise men who are completely devoted to studying all of those things. Matthew tells us that there's also something specific about them. You have it in your notes this morning. Your notes can are hard copy, or you can find the notes on your device on our church app. But here's what we know. We know that God was at work in and through the wise men, and here's what he was doing. He was guiding them to the child. He was guiding them to Jesus. God himself, the creator of the universe, was at work guiding the wise men to Jesus. The wise men say this in verse 9 in chapter 2, where they say, "We had seen the star, and the star guided them to Bethlehem." They were being guided by a star that went specifically to a location ahead of them, and it stopped over a place where the child was. The star guided them, went ahead of them, stopped over the place. God was at work, and God was at work guiding them to Jesus. Now, I want you to hear something very clearly this morning. I don't believe that this passage of Scripture is about us. For sure, there's no doubt that this passage of Scripture, Matthew chapter 2, is not in any way about us. But I will tell you this, it is true for us. While it's not about us, it is true for us. And what I mean by that, God didn't only guide the wise men to Jesus, he's also always at work guiding us to Jesus. In other words, if you have made it to Jesus, if you are hearing about Jesus today, if you have read about Jesus in your private time or your individual life or your personal life, if you have in any way sung about Jesus, celebrated Jesus, or been overjoyed by Jesus, here's what we know. The Scripture teaches us that it was God at work who guided us all the way to Jesus. We didn't guide ourselves. That God is always and only the way we ever make it all the way to Jesus. Without God's divine intervention, listen to this, in the Scriptures this is true. Without God's divine intervention, no one discovers Jesus. In fact, I think of it like this. If I'm at the New York State Fair and there's a lost child who's found, it is inaccurate for me to come home and tell you on Sunday morning, "Hey, I was at the fair, there was this lost child, but good news, the child found their parents." That's not accurate. It's more accurate to say, "When I was at the fair, there was a lost child, and good news, the parents found the child." The parents, with the help of whomever, found their child. In other words, it's not accurate for you and I to say things like, "I found God." It's more accurate for us to say, "I once was lost, but now I'm found." It's more accurate for us to believe that we were wandering, doing our own things, living for ourselves, for our own glory, our own happiness, self-reliant and self and independent from God, but somehow, miraculously, God worked to guide my life toward Jesus. It's God. To God be the glory for me knowing and seeing Jesus. And he uses signs to do that. With the wise men, he used a star. By the way, if you have any doubts about whether or not God, his favorite football team is the Dallas Cowboys, I want to ask you a question. Just bear with me. I want to ask you a question. When God wanted us to find Jesus, what did he put over Bethlehem? A star. What did he also put on the helmets of the Dallas Cowboys? Say it. What did he put on the helmet? A star. Case closed. And how many of you know the Cowboys need God's intervention right about now? That's enough. So God still sends us stars to guide us to Jesus. You know what? He still works to send us divine signs that he is guiding us to Jesus. He still sends us disciple makers, friends, family, coworkers, classmates, teammates, neighbors, and he does so to help guide us to Jesus. How many of you were led to Jesus by somebody that God sent to you? Raise your hand. God sent you somebody and they led you to Jesus. He is guiding you to Jesus through people. How many of you are praying for somebody that God guides them to Jesus somehow through some kind of whoever or whatever? And you know what else? He also sends us signs that come in the form of desperation. They come in the form of discouragement. They come in the form of things didn't work out the way I wanted to. I didn't get the diagnosis I wanted. I didn't get the job I wanted. I didn't get the income that I wanted. I didn't get the life that I wanted. I didn't get the family that I wanted. I didn't get whatever. Somehow my discouragement, my despair is also used by God to do what? To guide us to Jesus. And he says things like this. See, this isn't about you. You can't even manage your own life. How can you manage your own salvation? How can you manage your own soul? And God works miraculously to intervene and guide us to him, to himself. And that's the way he will work to guide us to Jesus. Now, so here's three observations, okay? There's three observations I want to make about the wise men that are not about us, but they're true for us, okay? I want to make sure you get that. They're not about us, but they're true for us. Number one, the wise men seek the child. The wise men seek the child. They are being guided specifically to the child, and he helps them to seek the child. In other words, it's God's intention to get them all the way to the person of Jesus, all the way there. When they arrive, they ask this question in Jerusalem, where is the newborn king of the Jews? Where is he? Where is Jesus himself? And we see that God is at work guiding them to Jesus. God is not guiding them to a church. God doesn't guide people to a religion. God doesn't guide people to a social club with good morals called the church. God doesn't guide us to children's programs and charismatic teachers and preachers. God doesn't guide us to the things that are surrounding the child. God is at work guiding these wise men, and we would be wise to see it the same way. He is guiding us to his own son, Jesus, not the peripherals around Jesus. Be careful that you don't seek the things that are around Jesus and never actually let God lead you directly to Jesus himself. Now, seeking Jesus is not easy. There's lots of distractions. Some of you said you're praying for someone, a loved one, friend, family member, to find Jesus. And can you even believe how many things get in the way, how much resistance, how much distraction there is? It's shocking. And the wise men on their way to Jesus encountered someone called King Herod, Herod the Great. Herod the Great was a despicable king. He was specifically appointed the king of the Jews under the authority of Rome, and he tries to deceive the wise men. He distorts the truth. He tries to deceive them. And you should know that this is a king who ruled firmly, and he ruled ruthlessly. He was ruthless enough that he murdered his own wife, several of his sons, and many others. And here the wise men stood before him as he tried to deceive them or otherwise to get in their way of truly encountering who Jesus was. And they very much could have abandoned the search, right? They very much could have said, look, this is too risky. I'm not sure I want to get all the way to Jesus. I know that we kind of see God at work here, but I'm not sure we want to get all the way there. And they could have abandoned, but they didn't abandon. They kept on going. And we should learn something, that it's possible for us to be so deterred or distracted that we ought get it in our mind that when you're being led to Jesus, when you're seeking the child himself, when the people that you're praying for are being led and guided all the way to the person of Jesus, we have to be so careful that we don't get deterred or distracted. Seek Jesus this season. It's not enough to get close to him, to just see the star. To make that a little bit easier for you, this month we have something special for you. I want you to take it. It's a freebie. That we have these guides for you on our series called Rescuing Jesus, and there's a whole series in here of Sundays. If you do Advent, the coming, the arrival of Jesus on a weekly basis until Christmas Day, this guide will help you read through the scriptures and organize it in hope and love and joy and so on. Also, for $2, you can find and read with us the book called Rescuing Christmas that goes along with our series. That's on the welcome wall before you leave. I would love for you to get this freebie. You could also use the app if you prefer a digital version. It's right on our Christmas app on the tab Christmas, and also the book to follow along with our series. It's our way of trying to help you get all the way to Jesus, not just to church, not just to singing the songs, not just to the cheer of the lights and the family photos, but also to get beyond and get all the way to Jesus. Now, number two, here's another observation real quick. Number two, they see the sign. They see the sign. The sign, of course, in the sky is the star. Jesus provides that sign to them. God does. And they see the sign. And the scriptures say, we saw his star as it rose. And when they saw the star, verse 10, they were filled with joy. Filled with joy. They see a sign and they filled with joy. Now, by the way, these are people who are very, very proficient in astrology. So isn't it fair to assume that when they saw the star, they weren't filled with joy because they saw the star? They weren't like, look. Look at this, this is a star. I'm so overjoyed. They've seen stars. They've been studying stars. Stars were a part of their vocation. So why would they be filled with joy seeing a star that was guiding them? And here's the reason why. Because this star was a sign that all of the prophecies that they had heard about from the Hebrew prophets, they were true. Here comes the rescuer. While God's people are in darkness, while God had turned his back on them, the prophet Isaiah had prophesied that during this darkness where God had turned his back, we were waiting for the Christ child, we were waiting for the Messiah, we were waiting for this new king, we were waiting for the ruler, the rescuer to come from heaven. While we were waiting, here comes the sign, and the sign is the star. And by the way, the prophecies indicated to them that Jesus would be born as a ruler, a king. He would be born of a virgin. He would specifically be born in Bethlehem, his birthplace. All of these things were prophesied, and now the wise men are discovering it's true. God's at work. He's intervening, and we've been waiting and waiting and waiting, but now here comes the hope, and God is affirming and confirming that this is what he's doing to rescue his people. Specifically, God is now, as announced by the angels, he is sending the rescuer. And it's another sign that the long-awaited Messiah, when he comes, this is what it means. We are not stuck alone on our own to deal with the sinfulness of our own lives, other people, and to deal with death and separation from God, that God rescues us from that specifically. Through the Bible, God promised the arrival of the coming of his Son. This is one of the most important events of all human history. So here's where you can apply this. You ready? Don't get discouraged. Don't get discouraged. Here's what we learn. Your future with God, your future is always better than your present. Don't be discouraged. No matter what you're facing, no matter what kind of waiting you're doing, no matter what kind of loneliness and darkness and what kind of separation, what kind of mundaneness, what kind of boredom that you're experiencing in your own life, with God, you always have hope that the future is better than the present. God is at work. He's intervening. And whatever you're suffering with today, ultimately, one day, God is going to rescue you from, by faith. And ultimately, we find our way to celebrate and worship and live with God forever. And this hope that came in the New Testament was a person. It wasn't optimism. They weren't hoping that the circumstances changed. It was hope in a person. And by the way, here's how you can hope in God. You simply look back at to what he's always done, and you can expect it's the same thing he will always do. Hope comes from getting familiar with the faithfulness of God in the past and trusting that he's going to do the same or better in the future. And if you have a lack of hope, often what that means is you're unaware of or disconnected from or unsure about what God has already done in the past. Hope means that you see it clearly and you believe that he will do it again in the future. And there's evidence here that that's exactly what he's doing, and he uses a sign called the star to do that. Number three, here's another observation. They savor the child. When they finally get to Jesus, They finally get there. Here's Jesus. We saw the star, we were filled with joy. We were seeking the child all along and we overcame the distractions and the deterrents. But now here we are at Jesus's bedside. He is actually now a child, not an infant. And when they saw him, they had a response. They bowed down and they worshiped him. This is what it means. They were savoring the child. This is the hero. This is the rescuer. This is the prophesied one. This is the one we have been waiting for. He is the one. And they savored Jesus by bowing and worshiping. They opened up their treasure chests. And here comes the gold, frankincense, and myrrh of all kinds of value. We'll talk about that in the weeks to come. But here he is, savoring the child, all of the wise men. And they discover on their own, up close and personal, that Jesus is their only living hope. In the New Testament, the earliest followers of Jesus cultivated this habit of hope. They believed that Jesus' life and his death and his resurrection was God's surprising response to our slavery, our isolation, and death. The empty tomb means that there's hope. That they we're anticipating this Christian hope, which is bold, waiting that eventually the whole universe will be rescued, the creation will be rescued, the human beings will be rescued, all from evil and death. Christian hope looks back to the risen Jesus in order for us to look forward to know that one day we will be raised to life again too, permanently and forever in heaven. And how does that happen? Because of the person Jesus, because of the Christ child Jesus. Keep in mind that you have this in your notes, that your worship, when you really see Jesus, that your worship is the only acceptable response to meeting the real Jesus. That means that when we really meet Jesus and we meet him for reals, he gets everything. The only real response is he gets my mind, he gets my heart, he gets everything I own. If I've got gold, frankincense, and myrrh, he gets it all. He doesn't get gold and frankincense. And we're like, I don't know about that. I mean, the myrrh, I'm just in case things don't work out between us. He gets everything. Our kids, our careers, our hopes, dreams, purpose, our identity. The only way to really respond to Jesus accurately when you meet the real Jesus is he sparks in us a life of worship and joy. That's last on your notes. Seeing Jesus clearly leads to a life of lasting joy and worship. And you might say, Pastor Dan, I don't really know about all this joy and hope. My life isn't really marked by that. My life is marked with stress and anxiety and worry about the future, and I find myself at times even sensing in my own heart a little bit of resentment about who's betrayed me and hurt me in the past. I have fears that drive me. And listen, here's what I want you to hear. I want you to hear this. That it's probably not trouble managing your life. It probably has to do with the lack of clarity and seeing, trusting, believing, and adoring who Jesus is for you. All of those things I just described come from a lack of clarity as to who is Jesus and how much do I belong to him. And I want you to meet Jesus for yourself. Meet Jesus up close and personal. I want you to meet Jesus in ways that will spark you to worship, where you give him everything. If you're struggling with joy and you feel at times hopeless, it's very, very likely that the Jesus that you see isn't the clear one who is the rescuer, the hope giver, the source of all of our joy. And you might be turning to things that you own. You know, I mean, I remember how happy I was when I got in my newish car and put the key in and turned it and it worked and it drove me around and I thought, I love this car. I love this car so much. It brings me so much happiness. Where did that rust spot come from? Just like that, my happiness gone. You think about how fast our happiness goes away when we rest our happiness in our homes. I looked at my home for years and years and years and was admiring the new roof that was put on it. And recently, my new roof started something that I have a hard time accepting. Now it's leaking. Some of us put our joy or our happiness comes from working on our body and staying in shape and making sure that we're toned up and we're losing the amount of weight that we want to lose. And here's what I've learned, that over time, no matter how much weight you lose or how toned up you get, eventually the doctor says, here's your prescription for the blood pressure pills. Eventually our bodies begin to wear out and wear down. I can't rest my happiness in my body, in my car, in my home. I got this inheritance. You might say, Pastor, I got this inheritance. You know what I discovered? It made me so happy for about 6 months until it ran out, because it didn't last for very long. I'm really, really happy about this relationship, my spouse, my kids, this new boyfriend, new girlfriend. It's really making me so happy. But I got to tell you, here's what I've learned, that even though I'm happy on the outside, on the inside, it didn't complete me. I don't feel fulfilled, satisfied, and gratified. Here's what the scripture teaches. Everything that we are, everything that we see, touch, and feel is decaying. Everything around us is a source of sorrow. Everything is unreliable. And if your joy, your deepest joy, isn't in, if your deepest hope doesn't rest in Jesus, something will rob that joy from you. Something or someone will rob that joy from you. When Jesus is describing this joy that's available, you know what he says? He says, right now on earth, you're experiencing sorrow. You're experiencing sorrow. I'm going to leave, and on earth, you're experiencing sorrow like a mother who is experiencing labor pains. And in those labor pains, there is much sorrow. But here's what he says. But listen, Jesus says, your grief will suddenly turn to wonderful joy. So you have sorrow now, but I will see you again, and then you will rejoice, and no one can rob you of that joy. I remember my wife's second delivery of our second child when she said with this horrendous, scary voice that still rattles me to the bone, she said, I am never doing this again. And then her head spun all the way around. And I demanded to know who did this to her. Do you know, after she said that, we had three more pregnancies. Do you know why? Because the sorrow was temporary. And then eventually we had the little lives that we cherished of these children, and that joy resonated deeply, and it caused us to start that process all over again. And Jesus says that your existence on earth, you know what it's like? It's like labor pains. But it's short term. It's only a short period of time that this sorrow lands and lives in and with you. But I, Jesus, will see you again, and no one will be able to rob you of that joy. How many of you are ready for a day where there is no more robbing of your joy? Are you ready for that? No more failing, faltering, no more rusting, no more leaking, no more blood pressure pills. A joy that is permanent, it is eternal, it is a joy that will follow once we leave this earth. Well, here's the good news. The good news is that God doesn't only and force us to wait till then. He says you can get up close enough to Jesus, and when you see him clearly, and when you rest your confident trust in him, when I bring you to his to the side of his little home, and you actually see him clearly and you receive him, that there is a new worship and a new joy that becomes your lifestyle. And it's not seasonal. It's not just cheer. It doesn't come and go. It means that it anchors you, holds you, it emboldens you, and really it comes from this, that God rescued you from despair. God rescued you from separation. And this Christmas season, please be careful that you don't get close to Jesus, but you don't get personal with Jesus. Please be careful that you don't learn to love and enjoy everything surrounding Christmas without getting yourself to the Christ child himself. He wants you to know him, trust him, rely on him, and also to adore him, and then experience the subsequent joy. Our ushers are coming now with the elements of our communion ceremony. And with this communion ceremony, we have different pieces that represent the broken body of Jesus, and we have another element that represents the shed blood of Jesus. And specifically today, we want you to be a part of it. If you understand, if you know, if you've rested your trust in who Jesus is, receive these elements with us. You don't have to be a member of our church or a member of our particular doctrinal angle, but instead, if you trust, know, and receive Jesus, then we want you to participate with us. Otherwise, let that pass right by so that one day when you do fully understand and trust Jesus for yourself, you can rejoice with us. We're going to sing as we receive these elements and pray as we receive these elements together.